Everyone in this world should live without fear, without censor, without persecution. And Uyghurs deserve to live free with their dignity and with their cultural heritage.
Coming up on British Thought Leaders, Uyghur poet and academic Aziz Issa Alkun on stopping the Chinese Communist Party from destroying his culture.
Poetry is one of the main factors how we keep the Uyghur language and also culture alive. Since year 2000, there's no Uyghur language school left. All the children, Uyghur children, forcibly teached Han Chinese.
He says the people of the world need to stand up to the Chinese regime.
They try to fool the world, actually. The Chinese Communist Party try to hide their heinous crimes against humanity.
Welcome to British Thought Leaders. Today I'm joined by Uyghur poet, academic and author Aziz Issa Alkun. Alkun, welcome. Thank you for joining us.
Thank you and good morning to you.
The persecution against the Uyghur people has been going on for some time. It was big news a couple of years ago, and then other big news has happened and we don't really hear so much about it now, but it's still ongoing just as strongly as before, isn't it?
We've been still hearing some information, regardless how tight the Chinese government is censoring all the information, and nothing changed. What only changed is some of the internment camp detainees. The number we estimated at the early stage in 2017 and 18, we estimated more than 5 million Uyghurs and some smaller number of other Turkic people like Kazakh and Kyrgyz were detained.
So 5 million in the camps?
Yeah, 5 million in the camp. Because I just want to give a brief overview of where the Uyghurs live. Uyghurs live nowadays called Xinjiang Uyghur Autonomous Region, which is officially established after Chinese Communist Party, they illegally reoccupied that region, and without any opportunity we will say whatsoever. Not decided our fate, but decided by the Stalin and Mao Zedong.
So this is also East Turkestan, it's the same
yes,
region.
Yes, exactly.
Yeah.
Regardless, we established twice Republic of East Turkestan in 12 November 1933, and then 12 again, except the same day, 12 November in 1944. So that's very massive geographical area. Also very kind of it has very very important geopolitical value for the Central Asia. It has East Turkestan. We prefer East Turkestan. And the Xinjiang in Chinese, that means new territory or new colony in old Chinese. It's very obvious its name. It's illegally occupied territory.
How many camps are there?
They identified more than 1,200 camps around the region.
1,200
camps. You can call it internment camps, or you can call it concentration camps. What makes me sad that the reality is on the ground awful, and there's almost you hardly see any Uyghurs in the last few years in Urumqi, which Uyghur population is mostly based in the southern part of Urumqi city.
It's the capital.
Urumqi's capital of the Uyghur Autonomous Region or Uyghur homeland. And the BBC journalists also reported about that after they identified the location. They built one of the camp south of Urumqi, around 80 kilometers south of Urumqi city. It's like a massive, just it's this it built camp. It was massive, and it can hold more than 10,000 detainees, and some of them even searched more farther details, and they can identify it from the satellite, the location, everything. And these camps are exist. They try to fool the world, actually, the Chinese Communist Party try to hide their the heinous crimes against humanity. What they try to do, the people have begun to detain and they're locked up in the camp, into the camps. That was since 2017. And as you are aware, in the last few years, world media just paid focus on that the Uyghur genocide, and the Chinese government seems they try to find different way to fool the world, try to distance themselves or reject all the claims, and not allowing any journalists or independently go there or visit and investigate. What they did, again, they like in Aksu, Korla, and Kashgar, Khotan, in these the region, they just outside the city, they established kind of new industrial and economic zone, and they built a kind of factory from the bring, given the land with subsidized policy given to the inner China factory from Zhejiang or Shanghai. They built a kind of textile factories and fruit production factories, food production factories, food process, and mostly based on the textile, because this is main for the farmers in East Turkestan. For the Uyghurs, majority of them are in the south, is produce cotton plant. So they like they showed some of the detainees were sentenced very kind of not even the, any closer to the international standard, just like the closed doors, the massive sentence. They muted these Uyghurs to that factory they established to work there as a forced labor, and some of them also transferred to inner China. Work in the coastal area of inner China, like Shenzhen, Guangzhou, Zhejiang. This area work as a cheap labor, so we call it forced labor. And there's lots of research conducted to find out that this is connected. Many products we sell, made in China, sold in the West, which is connected to the Uyghur forced labor. That's one of the side. And second, they still kept some detainees, just very roughly any kind of transparency or fair legal process. They just given the sentence, prison sentence, and kept these Uyghurs in the same camps, and also some of the Uyghur prisoners just sent to the meet as far as Heilongjiang, right. Where we know very notorious camp prisons, many Falun Gong, many Chinese dissidents were tortured there. They do some of the Uyghur detainees mute there. So it's kind of they used all their strength. The CCP using all their strength try to keep these innocent people as long as they can to make them to forget all the horrible things they have endured, experience in 2017 and 2019. Until now, we haven't witnessed or heard any Uyghur persons who were detained in the past, allowed to travel to abroad. We haven't seen any.
So we're talking 1,200 camps, some of them holding up to 10,000 people. And suppose it's not just forced labor that they're used for, it's also trying to destroy the culture of the Uyghur people and imprison them. You're saying they're not allowed to leave the country either.
Yeah, that is the main purpose they try to do. This is like the former camp victims also given testimony in many different occasions. Especially Uyghur women and children became one of the easy target, and taking away the young children from their parents because no one able to look after them because parents in the camp. So this we also estimated as an estimation of more than half a million Uyghur children. Separated from their parents, and they try to educate them as much as possible, like Han Chinese, and they cannot speak the Uyghur mother tongue. And there's lots of sexual violence as well against women. You may have heard also a few years ago, BBC reported extensively on that that awful crimes committed. I was also at the London Uyghur Tribunal, people's court or public hearing. And that verdict also based on the evidence provided by many Uyghurs, including members of the Uyghur diaspora community, about their family, how did the family being persecuted, and especially separating the Uyghur children from their parents, and about the forced sterilization against Uyghur women was multifold. The Chinese government committed a crime against humanity and concluded that was a genocide. So it was verdicted finally after the two court hearing, verdicted that it was the Chinese Communist Party, Chinese government. They are committing a genocide on Uyghurs. So it's no one can deny that was became fact. Regardless, that was a public hearing, people's court. But we are hopeful this will be served as a kind of a legal step for the further to seek the justice for the victims and hold accountable for the Chinese Communist Party's crime against humanity.
Did things get worse for the Uyghur people when Xi Jinping took power?
Oh, definitely, because there's many reasons of that. It is like the situation became worse since Xi Jinping came to power, and also there's a loss of high rank. In the Zhongnanhai, there's lots of study about the situation, how to deal with the emerging of the Uyghur crisis. Of course, Uyghur crisis emerged from the first day in 1949. They started the illegal occupation of Uyghur homeland. It never stopped in the last more than 70 years. And what made this time different is. The world politics very pragmatic towards the China, and in the last 30 years, such a opportunity was provided by the Western technological firms, big international corporates, given the chance to China became, especially that was trend after the China joined the World Trade Organization. And then when the Xi Jinping came to power, he realized he has that capacity to do that technologically, because all the camps, everything we have learned so far was high-tech surveillance, and they are capable to the survey every single Uyghur person and put them where high-tech surveillance detention center, we called internment camp or concentration camp, and massive number. And because Xi Jinping learned and he knows very specifically about the leverage of China's economic growth, and seems like a world much more depend on China on the economy. And it's just like still, I mean, and I also blame the Western politicians not well aware or understand about Xi Jinping's intention. And now this is irreparable, the consequence.
You're an academic at SOAS, the School of Oriental and African Studies. They recently put out a statement for a Uyghur ethnographer who was imprisoned, calling on the Chinese authorities to release her. You know, it's Rahila Daul. It's quite unusual for an academic institution to put out a statement like this. Could you tell us more about it?
I know personally Rahila Daud very well. And the first time Rahila Daud, I remember, came to attend a conference in London organized and a conference based in at SOAS. That was in 2004, remember. Since then, Rahila Daud became like a regular visiting academic at SOAS. She's a professor. She's one of the best academic, dedicated all her academic work, study Uyghur culture, Uyghur folklore, and keep that cultural heritage alive and make the world aware of about that culture. So especially from 2013 to 2017, she worked, she involved in a project based at SOAS, and she worked with us. We are became a colleague. And so at this now, Rahila Daud, Professor Rahila Daud from Xinjiang University, she has not done anything wrong. She even, she was like, became like one of the prominent scholar even in China before her arrest. And she's a dedicated scholar, and also worked at the involved in the project at SOAS. So China should not detain her. And we are devastated when we hear she was even sentenced for a life sentence, life imprisonment.
You've recently released your book. So this is, congratulations. This is the first anthology of Uyghur poetry in English.
Thank you. Yes, yes, it was published on the 1st of November by the UK.
So, why is poetry important to the Uyghur people and to yourself?
It's very important. Poetry is one of the main factor how play main factor how we keep the Uyghur language and also culture alive. And this is the first Uyghur poetry anthology in English language. It classic section and the modern section, contemporary section. It reflects the Uyghur soul. And it's first time in English, and the English speaking world must read and aware of the situation. And again, it reflects Uyghurs the past and present day. Since year 2000, there's no Uyghur language school left. Mm-hmm. All the Uyghur children forcibly teach Han Chinese. If I say it, I was at Xinjiang University in 1988. My university the course even was in Uyghur language, not exist. And that was any child born in the year of 2000, they are now 23 years old. They cannot speak and write Uyghur. And this book, Uyghur Poems Anthology, so highlight the importance of Uyghur language and cultural heritage need to be kept alive and sustained. And also, it shows many, many detailed accounts where the Uyghur poets wrote about it and how the currently now Chinese Communist Party is alongside with forced assimilation, how they are implementing Uyghur cultural erosion or Uyghur cultural genocide as well. The bookshops all closed down. Many Uyghur books were burned, and Uyghur language are not allowed to use in public sphere or government level, and there's no Uyghur language either. And China. We've been hearing all the time, always keep repeating, like, according to law. But if you are according to law, you have to respect your own constitution. In 1955, they officially established the so-called Xinjiang Uyghur Autonomous Region, Xinjiang Weiwei Zichu, right? So it's said very clearly in the Chinese constitution, Uyghurs have rights to use their own language, even at the governmental level, and the education, finance, even the military. This is about autonomous, but they never implemented. They avoid. They never implemented, and when the Uyghurs demand that these rights, or even at least the equal right with the Han majority, what are Uyghurs accused with? Separatism.
I mean, your book covers 2,000 years of poems. Can you see a marked difference between, you know, the poets of old and their dreams and fears and the poets that came after the Communist Party was established?
There's differences. For example, poem which is very common among all the Turkic nations, even nowadays. That poem called Oğuzname, the epic of Oğuzname. It was recorded in Uyghur language at the 11th century, and was kept the Paris State Library. Right. And I started this book with that epic. That epic is particularly, it has particular meaning, and it's like we believe that epic, no one knows exactly, probably 2,000 years before Common Era or 5,000 years, we don't know exactly, but until now, many Turkic people, they believe that was the beginning, the starting point of their history. So I will read what in that poem said, Oğuznam epic. Under the sky of brightness, a girl was sitting alone. She was as beautiful as a fairy. On her forehead, a shining mole glowed like an amber, gleamed like an iron nail. She was so beautiful that if she smiled, heaven also smiled. If she cried, heaven also cried. When Oğuz Khan saw her, his whole body started to tremble. He fell unconscious. He fell in love and married her. I am king of the Uyghurs. When I call those who answer, I will be rewarded, and I will become their friend. Against those who do not answer, I will march in rage with my soldiers. I will make them my enemy.
Yeah.
This, I mean, like we could clearly say that was about the. That's what we call the two millennia of Uyghur poetic heritage, poetic voices. So at least we estimate that this poem was became epic 2,000 years ago. Mm. Clearly showing the political powers said very clearly, I'm a king of the Uyghurs, that we exist. We didn't go nowhere. We exist. We have empire. We have state. And can you see the love and politics all was combined. And how even the emperor, even the king, he has his own love and able to love a beautiful woman. And also politics there. How it started the Uyghur poem. Now I will read another poem, and such a contrast after the 2,000 years.
So this is a modern.
A modern version, yes. Now I will read one of the poet the poet's name is female poet Gulnisa Emin Gulhan. She was a high school Uyghur literature teacher. She was keep writing poems every night, one poem before her arrest, before 2017. And we heard last year she was kept in the camp and detained there, and last year she was sentenced to 17 and a half years imprisonment because what she did, she wrote a poem. The tenth night, the sunless sky, the woman's prison smiles from under the snow. The woman's prison emerges running at daybreak, dirty, cracked, and bleeding hands marked on the surface of white snow, a map of the woman's prison. They don't want to shed their tears. They just want to lift their heads. They just want to gaze at the sunless sky, their troubles, their yearnings, their nightmares and sleepless nights. They want to talk about it, someone on the other side. And written on 4th of December, 2015. And we can see the contrast and the two period, and 2,000 years ago and 2,000 years later.
I mean, releasing this book for you is not just about putting a book out into the world. It's about defending your very culture from this destruction. I mean, if we look at the Chinese history, there's 5,000 years of rich culture, and it's not just one, as you've talked about, not just one thing. There's all these different ethnicities and cultures feeding in. In my Western mind would think the Chinese authorities would want to celebrate that and send it out into the world, but instead, they're burning your books, they're arresting your poets, they're destroying your language. Why?
Yes, you are right. I mean, it's against what Chinese government claims. China has more than 5,000 years cultural history or civilization. And it is again on the how did Xi Jinping understand about it? And he's kind of, he thinks, he's very obsessive about Uyghurs because more than 40% of China's natural resources comes from the Uyghur homeland.
Right.
And he's not confident. He's against, of course, he's clearly all CCP members. Or he against any kind of freedom of speech, democracy. And so he thinks if he assimilate the Uyghurs as like a Han Chinese and make them forget their cultural heritage, language, everything, he thinks his regime can feel secure or comfort. And that's the how he started this tragic inhuman policies towards the Uyghurs. Yes, absolutely right. So it's sad to see how one person can take Chinese massive country, how one country and his ideology, his hegemonic understanding about race, culture, and the leading the whole nation and setting up kind of propaganda and brainwashing the young, brilliant Chinese students as well. And it's all, I mean, it's very regrettable, all just wrong side of the history, wrong side of the humanity. If China is a country, at least some kind of strict implement the rule of law and respect some kind of, at least some kind of the freedom of speech, I'm sure majority of Han Chinese population against such a policy, and should be regarded as a valuable asset, not only for the perspective of Chinese government or Han Chinese. Also, it's important part of the world, world civilization. It should be protected. Should be, you know, also good for China, for China itself as well, but unfortunately not, because this is Xi Jinping's narrow nationalistic policy. It makes China not great. Actually, it makes putting China is a kind of at the side of the world history.
And the book ends with your own poem, Roses. And can you talk to us a bit about the inspiration behind that?
Yes, in autumn 2021, I was attend the London Uyghur Tribunal. That time, one of the day, I was sitting in the rear garden of my house, drinking coffee, looking at the roses, and it was end of November, and the very red, powerful smell, scent, and rose, just like ignoring all the change of nature, but giving flowers. I was so inspired, and I would try to write something, and suddenly comes up that poem. And now I'm going to read last verses from that poem, and how the book ends. Roses, dedicated to my mother and to all innocent Uyghurs who have been arrested and detained in China's 21st century concentration camps since 2017. The monster has left countless scars. It has pierced me with needles. But still, I call for justice for those who have suffered more, but my spirit is still fighting, my hope is still alive. Each time I find new courage, it brings the joy of a smile. Although it's autumn, the leaves in my garden are still green, the first rose I planted 3 years ago to mark the destruction of my father's grave. The second rose I planted on Mother's Day last year. The third rose I planted for the unknown Uyghurs who survived inside the camps. My roses are blossoming with hope, singing a song of freedom. Without waiting for the spring, they remind us how beautiful it is to be alive, to live in peace in our beautiful world.
That's easy. So, Algun, thank you for joining us on British Thought Leaders.
Thank you for inviting me and share what I know and what I have been experiencing in the last few years. I would like to say a last word. I know not only the Uyghurs in China, also Tibetans, also Mongols, also ordinary Chinese citizens suffered a lot because of this one-party rule, the oppressive regime. I was born right the beginning of the Cultural Revolution. I know millions of ordinary Han Chinese people died from the revolution. Also, hundreds of thousands, or even over a million of Uyghurs also died. And now the cycle repeating again. Why the people in China, everyone, why they cannot have the political rights? Why they cannot live free like Europeans, like Americans? Why there's some kind of political campaign all the time? Why every citizen's life designated and controlled by the regime? Why? And I call all the Chinese people, all the people in the world who stand for freedom. In this century, in 21st century, we should not allow any authoritarian regime who try to censor, try to curtail citizens, ordinary citizens' freedom and their life. Everyone in this world should live without fear, without censor, without persecution. And Uyghurs deserve to live free with their dignity and with their cultural heritage. Thank you.